This is the Mueller Report. I'm Milena Balbo. Welcome to episode 6 of the Mueller Report, a reading. Thanks for tuning in. This episode will be the first part of several needed to cover volume 1, section 4 of the Mueller Report, which is entitled Russian Government Links to and Contacts with the Trump Campaign. In its entirety, this section spans 108 pages and includes 987 footnotes, so it's a bit of a bear. There are some, but not an inordinate number of redactions in this section. And as always, I will read any unredacted and substantive footnotes in place where they are called out in the text. This section is divided into two parts. A, which covers the campaign period between September 2015 and Election Day, November 8, 2016, and B, which covers any contacts between Russia and the Trump campaign during the post-election transition period. In this episode, I'll narrate the first half, approximately, of Part A, the campaign period, and this will include sections about the Trump Tower Moscow project and foreign policy advisor George Papadopoulos. So any contacts or meetings related to those two. We have a lot ahead of us. This is the longest episode to date. So after this very short break, I'll dive right in. Be right back. Section 4, Russian Government Links to and Contacts with the Trump Campaign. The office identified multiple contacts, links in the words of the appointment order, between Trump campaign officials and individuals with ties to the Russian government. The office investigated whether those contacts constituted a third avenue of attempted Russian interference with or influence on the 2016 presidential election. In particular, the investigation examined whether these contacts involved or resulted in coordination or a conspiracy with the Trump campaign and Russia, including with respect to Russia providing assistance to the campaign in exchange for any sort of favorable treatment in the future. Based on the available information, the investigation did not establish such coordination. This section describes the principal links between the Trump campaign and individuals with ties to the Russian government, including some contacts with campaign officials or associates that have been publicly reported to involve Russian contacts. Each subsection begins with an overview of the Russian contact at issue and then describes in detail the relevant facts, which are generally presented in chronological order, beginning with the early months of the campaign and ending through the post-election transition period. A. Campaign period, September 2015 to November 8, 2016. Russian government-connected individuals and media entities began showing interest in Trump's campaign in the months after he announced his candidacy in June 2015. At this point, footnote 288 reads, for example, on August 18, 2015, on behalf of the editor-in-chief of the internet newspaper Vzglyad, I don't know if that's the proper pronunciation, it is spelled V-Z-G-L-Y-A-D, Georgi Asatryan emailed campaign press secretary Hope Hicks asking for a phone or in-person candidate interview. One day earlier, the publication's founder and former Russian parliamentarian Konstantin Rykov had registered two Russian websites, Trump2016.ru and DonaldTrump2016.ru. No interview took place. End footnote. Because Trump's status as a public figure at the time was attributable in large part to his prior business and entertainment dealings, this office investigated whether a business contact with Russia-linked individuals and entities during the campaign period, the Trump Tower Moscow Project, see Volume 1, Section 4A1, Infra, led to or involved coordination of election assistance. Outreach from individuals with ties to Russia continued in the spring and summer of 2016, when Trump was moving forward and eventually becoming the Republican nominee for president. As set forth below, the office evaluated a series of links during this period. Outreach to two of Trump's then-recently named foreign policy advisors, including a representation that Russia had dirt on Clinton in the form of thousands of emails, Volume 1, Sections 4A2 and 4A3, dealings with a D.C.-based think tank that specializes in Russia and has connections with its government, Volume 1, Section 4A4, a meeting at Trump Tower between the campaign and a Russian lawyer promising dirt on candidate Clinton that was, quote, part of Russia and its government's support for Trump, close quote, Volume 1, Section 4A5. Events at the Republican National Convention, Volume 1, Section 4A6. Post-convention contacts between Trump campaign officials and Russia's ambassador to the United States, Volume 1, Section 4A7, and contacts through campaign chairman Paul Manafort, who had previously worked for a Russian oligarch and a pro-Russian political party in Ukraine, Volume 1, Section 4A8. 1. Trump Tower Moscow Project. The Trump Organization has pursued and completed projects outside the United States as part of its real estate portfolio. Some projects have involved the acquisition and ownership through subsidiary corporate structures of property. In other cases, the Trump Organization has executed licensing deals with real estate developers and management companies, often local to the country where the project was located. Between at least 2013 and 2016, the Trump Organization explored a similar licensing deal in Russia, involving the construction of a Trump-branded property in Moscow. The project, commonly referred to as a, quote, Trump Tower Moscow or, quote, Trump Moscow project, anticipated a combination of commercial, hotel, and residential properties all within the same building. Between 2013 and June 2016, several employees of the Trump Organization, including then-president of the organization, Donald J. Trump, pursued a Moscow deal with several Russian counterparties. From the fall of 2015 until the middle of 2016, Michael Cohen spearheaded the Trump Organization's pursuit of a Trump Tower Moscow project, including by reporting on the project's status to candidate Trump and other executives in the Trump Organization. At this point, footnote 290 reads, as noted in Volume 1, Section 3D1, Supra, in November 2018, Cohen pleaded guilty to making false statements to Congress concerning, among other things, the duration of the Trump Tower Moscow project. See Information, Paragraph 7A, United States v. Michael Cohen, 118 CR 850, SDNY, November 29, 2018, Document 2, the Cohen Information. A. Trump Tower Moscow Venture with the Crocus Group, 2013 to 2014. The Trump Organization and the Crocus Group, a Russian real estate conglomerate owned and controlled by Aras Agalarov, began discussing a Russia-based real estate project shortly after the conclusion of the 2013 Miss Universe pageant in Moscow. At this point, footnote 291 reads, see interview of Donald J. Trump Jr., Senate Judiciary Committee, 115th Congress, 13, September 7, 2017. Quote, following the pageant, the Trump Organization and Mr. Agalarov's company, Crocus Group, began preliminary discussion, potential real estate projects in Moscow, close quote. As has been widely reported, the Miss Universe pageant, which Trump co-owned at the time, was held at the Ergalarov-owned Crocus City Hall in Moscow in November 2013. Both groups were involved in organizing the pageant, and Aris Ergalarov's son, Emin, was a musical performer at the event, which Trump attended. End footnote. Donald J. Trump Jr. served as the primary negotiator on behalf of the Trump Organization. Emin Agalarov, son of Aris Agalarov, and Irakli Ike Kavaladze, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, so excuse me, represented the Crocus Group during negotiations, with the occasional assistance of Robert Goldstone. In December 2013, Kavaladze and Trump Jr. negotiated and signed preliminary terms of an agreement for the Trump Tower Moscow project. On December 23, 2013, after discussions with Donald J. Trump, the Trump Organization agreed to accept an arrangement whereby the organization received a flat 3.5% commission on all sales, with no licensing fees or incentives. The parties negotiated a letter of intent during January and February 2014. From January 2014 through November 2014, the Trump Organization and Crocus Group discussed development plans for the Moscow project. Sometime before January 24, 2014, the Crocus Group sent the Trump Organization a proposal for an 800-unit, 194-meter building to be constructed at an Agalarov-owned site in Moscow called Crocus City, which had also been the site of the Miss Universe pageant. In February 2014, Ivanka Trump met with Emin Agalarov and toured the Crocus City site during a visit to Moscow. From March 2014 through July 2014, the groups discussed, quote, design standards and other architectural elements. For example, in July 2014, members of the Trump Organization sent Crocus Group counterparties questions about the demographics of these prospective buyers, quote, in the Crocus City area, and the development of neighboring parcels in Crocus City and concepts for redesigning portions of the building. In August 2014, the Trump Organization requested specifications for a competing Marriott-branded tower being built in Crocus City. Beginning in September 2014, the Trump Organization stopped responding in a timely fashion to correspondence and proposals from the Crocus Group. Communications between the two groups continued through November 2014 with decreasing frequency. What appears to be the last communication is dated November 24, 2014. The project appears not to have developed past the planning stage, and no construction occurred. B. Communications with IC Expert Investment Company and Georgi Ritskylitz, summer and fall 2015. In the late summer of 2015, the Trump Organization received a new inquiry about pursuing a Trump Tower Moscow project. In approximately September 2015, Felix Sater, a New York-based real estate advisor, contacted Michael Cohen, then executive vice president of the Trump Organization and special counsel to Donald J. Trump. At this point, footnote 304 reads, Sater provided information to our office in two 2017 interviews conducted under a proffer agreement. The rest of the footnote, which is only about a third of a line of text, has been redacted for grand jury testimony. End footnote. Sater had previously worked with the Trump Organization and advised it on a number of domestic and international projects. Sater had explored the possibility of a Trump Tower project in Moscow while working with the Trump Organization and therefore knew of the organization's general interest in completing a deal there. Sater had also served as an informal agent of the Trump Organization in Moscow previously and had accompanied Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. to Moscow in the mid-2000s. Sater contacted Cohen on behalf of IC Expert Investment Company, IC Expert, a Russian real estate development corporation controlled by Andrei Vladimirovich Rozov. Sater had known Rozov since approximately 2007 and, in 2014, had served as an agent on behalf of Rozov during Rozov's purchase of a building in New York City. Sater later contacted Rozov and proposed that IC Expert pursue a Trump Tower Moscow project in which IC Expert would license the name and brand from the Trump Organization but construct the building on its own. Sater worked on the deal with Rozov and another employee of IC Expert. Cohen was the only Trump Organization representative to negotiate directly with IC Expert or its agents. In approximately September 2015, Cohen obtained approval to negotiate with IC Expert from candidate Trump, who was then president of the Trump Organization. Cohen provided updates directly to Trump about the project throughout 2015 and into 2016, assuring him the project was continuing. Cohen also discussed the Trump Moscow project with Ivanka Trump as to design elements, such as possible architects to use for the project, and Donald J. Trump Jr. about his experience in Moscow and possible involvement in the project during the fall of 2015. Also during the fall of 2015, Cohen communicated about the Trump Moscow proposal with Georgi Ritskylids, a business executive who previously had been involved in a development deal with the Trump Organization in Batumi, Georgia. At this point, footnote 313 reads, Ritskylids was a U.S.-based executive of the Georgian company Silk Road Group. In approximately 2011, Silk Road Group and the Trump Organization entered into a licensing agreement to build a Trump-branded property in Batumi, Georgia. Ritskylids was also involved in discussions for a Trump-branded project in Astana, Kazakhstan. The office twice interviewed Ritskylids. The rest of the footnote, which is approximately a third of a line of text, has been redacted for grand jury testimony. End footnote. Cohen stated that he spoke to Ritskylids in part because Ritskylids had pursued business ventures in Moscow, including a licensing deal with the Agalarov-owned Crocus Group. On September 22, 2015, Cohen forwarded a preliminary design study for the Trump Moscow project to Ritskylids, adding, quote, I look forward to your reply about this spectacular project in Moscow, close quote. Ritskylids forwarded Cohen's email to an associate and wrote, quote, if we could organize the meeting in New York at the highest level of the Russian government and Mr. Trump, this project would definitely receive the worldwide attention, close quote. On September 2015, Ritskylids sent Cohen an attachment that he described as a proposed, quote, letter to the mayor of Moscow from Trump Org, close quote. Explaining that, quote, we need to send this letter to the mayor of Moscow, parentheses, second guy in Russia, close parentheses. He is aware of the potential project and will pledge his support, close quote. In a second email to Cohen, sent the same day, Ritskylids provided a translation of the letter, which described the Trump Moscow project as, quote, a symbol of stronger economic, business, and cultural relationships between New York and Moscow, and therefore the United States and the Russian Federation, close quote. On September 27, 2015, Ritskylids sent another email to Cohen, proposing that the Trump Organization partner on the Trump Moscow project with, quote, Global Development Group, LLC, which he described as being controlled by Mikhail Posikin, a Russian architect, and Simon Nizhardze. Cohen told the office that he ultimately declined the proposal and continued to work with IC Expert, the company represented by Felix Sater. C. Letter of Intent and Contacts to Russian Government, October 2015 to January 2016. 1. Trump signs the letter of intent on behalf of the Trump Organization. Between approximately October 13, 2015 and November 2nd, 2015, the Trump Organization, through its subsidiary Trump Acquisition LLC and IC Expert, completed a letter of intent, or LOI, for a Trump Moscow property. The LOI, signed by Trump for the Trump Organization and Rozov on behalf of IC Expert, was, quote, intended to facilitate further discussions in order to, quote, attempt to enter into a mutually acceptable agreement, close quote, related to the Trump-branded property in Moscow. The LOI contemplated a development with residential, hotel, commercial, and office components and called for, quote, approximately 250 first-class luxury residential condominiums, close quote, as well as, quote, one first-class luxury hotel consisting of approximately 15 floors and containing not fewer than 150 hotel rooms, close quote. For the residential and commercial portions of the project, the Trump Organization would receive between 1% and 5% of all condominium sales, plus 3% of all rental and other revenue. This sentence includes footnote 322, which reads, the LOI called for the Trump Organization to receive 5% of all gross sales up to 100 million, 4% of all gross sales from 100 million to 250 million, 3% of all gross sales from 250 million to 500 million, and 2% of all gross sales from 500 million to 1 billion, and 1% of all gross sales over 1 billion. LOI Schedule 2, end footnote. For the project's hotel portion, the Trump Organization would receive a base fee of 3% of gross operating revenues for the first 5 years and 4% thereafter, plus a separate incentive fee of 20% of operating profit. Under the LOI, the Trump Organization would also receive a $4 million, quote, upfront fee prior to groundbreaking. Under these terms, the Trump Organization stood to earn substantial sums over the lifetime of the project without assuming significant liabilities or financing commitments. On November 3, 2015, the day after the Trump Organization transmitted the LOI, Sater emailed Cohen suggesting that the Trump Moscow project could be used to increase candidate Trump's chances of being elected, writing, buddy, our boy can become president of the USA and we can engineer it. I will get all of Putin's team to buy in on this. I will manage this process. Michael, Putin gets on stage with Donald for a ribbon cutting for Trump Moscow and Donald owns the Republican nomination and possibly beats Hillary and our boy is in. We will manage this process better than anyone. You and I will get Donald and Vladimir on a stage together very shortly. That the game changer. Approximately a month later, after the LOI had been signed, Lana Erkova emailed Ivanka Trump on behalf of Erkova's then-husband, Dmitry Klokov, to offer Klokov's assistance to the Trump campaign. At this point, footnote 334 reads, Ivanka Trump received an email from a woman who identified herself as Lana E. Alexander, which said in part, quote, if you ask anyone who knows Russian to Google my husband, Dmitry Klokov, you'll see who he is close to and that he has done Putin's political campaigns, close quote, 11/16/15 email Erkova to I. Trump. Footnote. Klokov was at that time director of external communications for PJSC, Federal Grid Company of Unified Energy System, a large Russian electricity transmission company, and had been previously employed as an aide and press secretary to Russia's energy minister. Ivanka Trump forwarded the email to Cohen. He told the office that after receiving this inquiry, he had conducted an internet search for Klokov's name and concluded, incorrectly, that Klokov was a former Olympic weightlifter. At this point, footnote 336 reads, Cohen, 8/7/18, 302/17. During his interviews with this office, Cohen still appeared to believe that the Klokov he spoke with was that Olympian. The investigation, however, established that the email address used to communicate with Cohen belongs to a different Dmitry Klokov, as described above. End footnote. Between November 18 and 19, 2015, Klokov and Cohen had at least one telephone call and exchanged several emails. Describing himself in emails to Cohen as a, quote, trusted person who could offer the campaign, quote, political synergy and, quote, synergy on a government level, Klokov recommended that Cohen travel to Russia to speak with him and an unidentified intermediary. Klokov said that those conversations could facilitate a later meeting in Russia between the candidate and an individual Klokov described as, quote, our person of interest. In an email to the office, Erkova later identified the, quote, person of interest as Russian President Vladimir Putin. At this point, footnote 338 reads, in July 2018, the office received an unsolicited email purporting to be from Erkova, in which she wrote that, quote, at the end of 2015 and beginning of 2016, I was asked by my ex-husband to contact Ivanka Trump and offer cooperation to Trump's team on behalf of the Russian officials. Close quote. 7/27/18 email Erkova to Special Counsel's office. The email claimed that the officials wanted to offer candidate Trump, quote, land in Crimea, among other things, and unofficial meeting with Putin. Quote. In order to vet the email's claims, the office responded, requesting more details. The office did not receive any reply. End footnote. Later that day, Sater followed up. Donald doesn't stare down. He negotiates and understands the economic issues, and Putin only wants to deal with a pragmatic leader, and a successful businessman is a good candidate for someone who knows how to negotiate. Quote, business, politics, whatever, it all is the same for someone who knows how to deal. Close quote. I think I can get Putin to say that at the Trump Moscow press conference. If he says it, we own this election. America's most difficult adversary agreeing that Donald is a good guy to negotiate. We can own this election. Michael, my next steps are very sensitive with Putin's very, very close people. We can pull this off. Michael, let's go. Two boys from Brooklyn getting a USA president elected. This is good, really good. According to Cohen, he did not consider the political import of the Trump-Moscow project to the 2016 U.S. presidential election at the time. Cohen also did not recall candidate Trump or anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign discussing the political implications of the Trump-Moscow project with him. However, Cohen recalled conversations with Trump in which the candidate suggested that his campaign would be a significant, quote, infomercial for Trump-branded properties. Two, post-LOI contacts with individuals in Russia. Given the size of the Trump-Moscow project, Sater and Cohen believed the project required approval, whether express or implicit, from the Russian national government, including from the presidential administration of Russia. Sater stated that he therefore began to contact the presidential administration through another Russian business contact. In early negotiations with the Trump Organization, Sater had alluded to the need for government approval and his attempts to set up meetings with Russian officials. On October 12, 2015, for example, Sater wrote to Cohen that, quote, all we need is Putin on board and we are golden, close quote, and that a, quote, meeting with Putin and top deputy is tentatively set for the 14th of October, close quote. The next several words have been redacted, grand jury exception. This meeting was being coordinated by associates in Russia and that he had no direct interaction with the Russian government. In the call and follow-on emails with Klokov, Cohen discussed his desire to use a near-term trip to Russia to do site surveys and talk over the Trump Moscow project with local developers. Cohen registered his willingness also to meet with Klokov and the unidentified intermediary, but was emphatic that all meetings in Russia involving him or candidate Trump, including a possible meeting between candidate Trump and Putin, would need to be, quote, in conjunction with the development and an official visit, with the Trump Organization receiving a formal invitation to visit. Parentheses, Klokov had written previously that, quote, the visit by candidate Trump to Russia has to be informal, close quote, end parentheses. Klokov had also previously recommended to Cohen that he separate their negotiations over a possible meeting between Trump and the, quote, person of interest from any existing business track. At this point, footnote 341 reads 11-18-15 email Klokov to Cohen, 6:51 a.m., quote, I would suggest separating your negotiations and our proposal to meet. I assure you, after the meeting, level of projects and their capacity can be completely different, having the most important support, close quote, end footnote. Re-emphasizing that his outreach was not done on behalf of any business, Klokov added in second email to Cohen that, if publicized well, such a meeting could have, quote, phenomenal impact, quote, in a business dimension, and that the, quote, person of interest's, quote, most important support could have significant ramifications for the, quote, level of projects and their capacity. Klokov concluded by telling Cohen that there was, quote, no bigger warranty in any project than the consent of the person of interest, close quote. Cohen rejected the proposal, saying that, quote, currently our LOI developer is in talks with VP's chief of staff and arranging a formal invite for the two to meet, close quote. This email appears to be their final exchange, and the investigation did not identify evidence that Cohen brought Klokov's initial offer of assistance to the campaign's attention, or that anyone associated with the Trump Organization or the campaign dealt with Klokov at a later date. Cohen explained that he did not pursue the proposed meeting because he was already working on the Moscow project with Sater, who Cohen understood to have his own connections to the Russian government. By late December 2015, however, Cohen was complaining that Sater had not been able to use those connections to set up the promised meeting with Russian government officials. Cohen told Sater that he was, quote, setting up the meeting myself. On January 11, 2016, Cohen emailed the office of Dmitry Peskov, the Russian government's press secretary, indicating that he desired contact with Sergei Ivanov, Putin's chief of staff. Cohen erroneously used the email address pr_peskova@prpress.gov PR@PRPress.ru instead of PR_Peskova@PRPress.gov.ru. So the email apparently did not go through. On January 14, 2016, Cohen emailed a different address, info@prpress.gov.ru, with the following message. Dear Mr. Peskov, over the past few months, I have been working with a company based in Russia regarding the development of a Trump Tower Moscow project in Moscow City. Without getting into lengthy specifics, the communication between our two sides has stalled. As this project is too important, I am hereby requesting your assistance. I respectfully request someone, preferably you, contact me so that I might discuss the specifics as well as arranging meetings with the appropriate individuals. I thank you in advance for your assistance and look forward to hearing from you soon. 2 days later, Cohen sent an email to PR_Peskova@PRPress.gov.ru, repeating his request to speak with Sergei Ivanov. Cohen testified to Congress and initially told the office that he did not recall receiving a response to this email inquiry and that he decided to terminate any further work on the Trump Moscow project as of January 2016. Cohen later admitted these statements were false. In fact, Cohen had received and recalled receiving a response to this inquiry, and he continued to work on and update candidate Trump on the project through as late as June 2016. At this point, footnote 349 reads Cohen information, paragraphs 4 and 7. Cohen's interactions with President Trump and the president's lawyers when preparing his congressional testimony are discussed further in Volume 2. See Volume 2, Section 2K3, Infra, end footnote. On January 20, 2016, Cohen received an email from Elena Polyakova, Peskov's personal assistant. Writing from her personal email account, Polyakova stated that she had been trying to reach Cohen and asked that he call her on the personal number that she had provided. Shortly after receiving Polyakova's email, Cohen called and spoke to her for 20 minutes. At this point, footnote 351 reads, telephone records show a 20-minute call on January 20, 2016 between Cohen and the number Polyakova provided in her email. Call records of Michael Cohen. And the next several words have been redacted for grand jury exception. After the call, Cohen saved Polyakova's contact information in his Trump Organization Outlook contact list. 1-2016, Michael Cohen, Microsoft Outlook entry, 6:22 a.m., end footnote. Cohen described to Polyakova his position at the Trump Organization and outlined the proposed Trump Moscow project, including information about the Russian counterparty with which the Trump Organization had partnered. Cohen requested assistance in moving the project forward, both in securing land to build the project and with financing. According to Cohen, Polyakova asked detailed questions and took notes, stating that she would need to follow up with others in Russia. Cohen could not recall any direct follow-up from Polyakova or from any other representative of the Russian government, nor did the office identify any evidence of direct follow-up. However, the day after Cohen's call with Polyakova, Sater texted Cohen, asking him to, quote, call me when you have a few minutes to chat. It's about Putin. They called today. Close quote. Sater then sent a draft invitation for Cohen to visit Moscow to discuss the Trump Moscow project. At this point, footnote 354 reads, the invitation purported to be from Genbank, a Russian bank that was, according to Sater, working at the behest of a larger bank, VTB, and would consider providing financing. 12/31/15, text messages, Sater and Cohen. Additional information about GenBank can be found infra. End footnote. Along with a note to tell me if the letter is good as amended by me, or make whatever changes you want and send it back to me. Close quote. After a further round of edits on January 25, 2016, Sater sends Cohen an invitation, signed by Andrei Ryabinsky of the company MHJ, to travel to, quote, Moscow for a working visit about the, quote, prospects of development and the construction business in Russia, close quote, quote, the various land plots available suited to construction of this enormous tower, and, quote, the opportunity to coordinate follow-up visits to Moscow by Mr. Donald Trump. According to Cohen, he elected not to travel at the time because of concerns about the lack of concrete proposals about land plots that could be considered as options for the project. D. Discussions about Russia travel by Michael Cohen or candidate Trump, December 2015 to June 2016. 1. Sater's overtures to Cohen to travel to Russia. The late January communication was neither the first nor the last time that Cohen contemplated visiting Russia in pursuit of the Trump-Moscow project. Beginning in late 2015, Sater repeatedly tried to arrange for Cohen and candidate Trump, as representatives of the Trump organization, to travel to Russia to meet with Russian government officials and possible financing partners. In December 2015, Sater sent Cohen a number of emails about logistics for traveling to Russia for meetings. On December 19, 2015, Sater wrote, please call me. I have Evgeny Dvoskin on the other line. At this point, footnote 359 reads, toll records show that Sater was speaking to Evgeny Dvoskin, call records of Felix Sater. The next several words have been redacted for grand jury exception. Dvoskin is an executive of GenBank, a large bank with lending focused in Crimea, Ukraine. At the time that Sater provided this financing letter to Cohen, GenBank was subject to U.S. government sanctions. See Russia-Ukraine-related sanctions and identifications, Office of Foreign Assets Control, December 22, 2015. Dvoskin, who had been deported from the United States in 2000 for criminal activity, was under indictment in the United States for stock fraud under the aliases Eugene Slusker and Gene Shustar. See United States v. Rizzo et al., 203 CR63, EDNY, February 6, 2003. End footnote. He needs a copy of your and Donald's passports. They need a scan of every page of the passports. Invitations and visas will be issued this week by VTB Bank to discuss financing for Trump Tower Moscow. Politically, neither Putin's office nor Ministry of Foreign Affairs cannot issue invite, so they are inviting commercially business. VTB is Russia's two biggest bank, and VTB Bank CEO Andrei Kostin will be at all meetings with Putin, so that it is a business meeting, not political. We will be invited to Russian consulate this week to receive invite and have visa issued. In response, Cohen texted Sater an image of his own passport. Cohen told the office that at one point he requested a copy of candidate Trump's passport from Rona Graff, Trump's executive assistant at the Trump Organization, and that Graff later brought Trump's passport to Cohen's office. The investigation did not, however, establish that the passport was forwarded to Sater. At this point, footnote 363 reads, on December 21, 2015, Sater sent Cohen a text message that read, they need a copy of DJT passport, to which Cohen responded, after I return from Moscow with you, with a date for him. 12:21:15 text messages Cohen and Sater. End footnote. In the spring of 2016, Sater and Cohen continued to discuss a trip to Moscow in connection with the Trump Moscow project. On April 20, 2016, Sater wrote Cohen, quote, "The people wanted to know when you are coming." On May 4, 2016, Sater followed up. "I had a chat with Moscow. Assuming the trip does happen, the question is before or after the convention. I said I believe, but don't know for sure, that it's probably after the convention. Obviously, the pre-meeting trip, you only, can happen anytime you want, but the two big guys wear the question. I said I would confirm and revert. Let me know about if I was right by saying I believe after Cleveland and also when you want to speak to them and possibly fly over." Cohen responded, quote, "My trip before Cleveland. Trump, once he becomes the nominee, after the convention." Close quote. The day after this exchange, Sater tied Cohen's travel to Russia to the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, or Forum, an annual event attended by prominent Russian politicians and businessmen. Sater told the office that he was informed by a business associate that Peskov wanted to invite Cohen to the forum. On May 5, 2016, Sater wrote to Cohen, "Peskov would like to invite you as his guest to the St. Petersburg Forum, which is Russia's Davos. It's June 16 through 19. He wants to meet there with you and possibly introduce you to either Putin or Medvedev, as they are not sure if one or both will be there. This is perfect. The entire business class of Russia will be there as well. He said anything you want to discuss, including dates and subjects, are on the table to discuss." The following day, Sater asked Cohen to confirm those dates would work for him to travel. Cohen wrote back, quote, "Works for me," close quote. On June 9, 2016, Sater sent Cohen a notice that he, Sater, was completing the badges for the forum, adding, quote, "Putin is there on the 17th, very strong chance you will meet him as well," close quote. On June 13, 2016, Sater forwarded Cohen an invitation to the forum, signed by the director of the Roscongress Foundation, the Russian entity organizing the forum. Sater also sent Cohen a Russian visa application and asked him to send two passport photos. According to Cohen, the invitation gave no indication that Peskov had been involved in inviting him. Cohen was concerned that Russian officials were not actually involved or were not interested in meeting with him, as Sater had alleged, and so he decided not to go to the forum. On June 14, 2016, Cohen met Sater in the lobby of the Trump Tower in New York and informed him that he would not be traveling at that time. 2. Candidate Trump's opportunities to travel to Russia. The investigation identified evidence that, during the period the Trump Moscow project was under consideration, the possibility of candidate Trump visiting Russia arose in two contexts. First, in interviews with the office, Cohen stated that he discussed the subject of traveling to Russia with Trump twice, once in late 2015 and again in spring 2016. According to Cohen, Trump indicated a willingness to travel if it would assist the project significantly. On one occasion, Trump told Cohen to speak with then-campaign manager Corey Lewandowski to coordinate the candidate's schedule. Cohen recalled that he spoke with Lewandowski, who suggested that they speak again when Cohen had actual dates to evaluate. Cohen indicated, however, that he knew that travel prior to the Republican National Convention would be impossible, given the candidate's pre-existing commitments to the campaign. Second, like Cohen, Trump received and turned down an invitation to the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. In late December 2015, Mira Duma, a contact of Ivanka Trump's from the fashion industry, first passed along invitations for Ivanka Trump and candidate Trump from Sergei Priodko, a deputy prime minister of the Russian Federation. On January 14, 2016, Rona Graf sent an email to Duma stating that Trump was, quote, honored to be asked to participate in the highly prestigious, close quote, forum event, but that he would, quote, have to decline the invitation given his, quote, very grueling and full travel schedule, close quote, as a presidential candidate. Graf asked Duma whether she recommended that Graf, quote, send a formal note to the deputy prime minister, close quote, declining his invitation. Duma replied that a formal note would be, quote, great. It does not appear that Graf prepared that note immediately. According to written answers from President Trump, at this point, footnote 380 reads, as explained in Volume 2 and Appendix C on September 17, 2018, the office sent written questions to the President's counsel. On November 20, 2018, the President provided written answers to those questions through counsel. Close footnote. Graf received an email from Deputy Prime Minister Priodko on March 17, 2016, again inviting Trump to participate in the 2016 forum in St. Petersburg. At this point, footnote 381 reads, written responses of Donald J. Trump, November 20th, 2018, at 17, response to question 4, part E. Quote, documents show that Ms. Graf prepared for my signature a brief response declining the invitation. Close quote. End footnote. 2 weeks later, on March 31, 2016, Graf prepared for Trump's signature a two-paragraph letter declining the invitation. The letter stated that Trump's, quote, schedule has become extremely demanding, close quote, because of the presidential campaign, that he, quote, already had several commitments in the United States, close quote, for the time of the forum, but that otherwise, quote, would have gladly given every consideration to attending such an important event, close quote. Graf forwarded the letter to another executive assistant at the Trump Organization, with the instructions to print the document on letterhead for Trump to sign. At approximately the same time that the letter was being prepared, Robert Forsman, a New York-based investment banker, began reaching out to Graf to secure an in-person meeting with candidate Trump. According to Forsman, he had been asked by Anton Kobyakov, a Russian presidential aide involved with the Roscongress Foundation, to see if Trump could speak at the forum. Forsman first emailed Graf on March 31, 2016, following a phone introduction brokered through Trump business associate Mark Burnett, who produced the television show The Apprentice. In his email, Forsman referenced his long-standing personal and professional expertise in Russia and Ukraine, his work setting up an early, quote, private channel between Vladimir Putin and former U.S. President George W. Bush, and an approach he had received from, quote, senior Kremlin officials about the candidate. Forsman asked Graf for a meeting with the candidate, Corey Lewandowski, or another relevant person, to discuss this and other, quote, concrete things. Forsman felt uncomfortable discussing over, quote, unsecure email. On April 4th, 2016, Graf forwarded Forsman's meeting request to Jessica Macchia, another executive assistant to Trump. With no response forthcoming, Forsman twice sent reminders to Graf, first on April 26 and again on April 30, 2016. Graf sent an apology to Forsman and forwarded his April 26 email as well as his initial March 2016 email to Lewandowski. On May 2, 2016, Graf forwarded Forsman's April 30th email, which suggested an alternative meeting with Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Trump so that Forsman could convey to them information that, quote, should be conveyed to the candidate personally or to someone the candidate absolutely trusts, close quote, to policy advisor Stephen Miller. No communications or other evidence obtained by the office indicate that the Trump campaign learned that Forsman was reaching out to invite the candidate to the forum, or that the campaign otherwise followed up with Forsman until after the election, when he interacted with the transition team as he pursued a possible position in the upcoming administration. When interviewed by the office, Forsman denied that the specific approach from, quote, senior Kremlin officials noted in his March 31, 2016 email was anything other than Kobyakov's invitation to Rus Congress. According to Forsman, the, quote, concrete things he referenced in the same email were a combination of the invitation itself, Forsman's personal perspectives on the invitation and Russia policy in general, and details of a Ukraine plan supported by a U.S. think tank, East-West Institute. Forsman told the office that Kobyakov had extended similar invitations through him to another Republican presidential candidate and one other politician. Forsman also said that Kobyakov had asked Forsman to invite Trump to speak after that other presidential candidate withdrew from the race and the other politician's participation did not work out. Finally, Forsman claimed to have no plans to establish a back channel involving Trump, stating the reference to his involvement in the Bush-Putin back channel was meant to burnish his credentials to the campaign. Forsman commented that he had not recognized any of the experts announced as Trump's foreign policy team in March 2016 and wanted to secure an in-person meeting with the candidate to share his professional background and policy views, including that Trump should decline Kobyakov's invitation to speak at the forum. That wraps up subsection A1, campaign period, September 2015 to November 8, 2016. Coming up is George Papadopoulos, which is section A2. But before that, I'm just going to take a quick break and then we'll dive right back in. Be right back. George Papadopoulos. George Papadopoulos was a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign from March 2016 to early October 2016. In late April 2016, Papadopoulos was told by London-based professor Joseph Mifsud, immediately after Mifsud's return from a trip to Moscow, that the Russian government had obtained, quote, dirt on candidate Clinton in the form of thousands of emails. One week later, on May 6, 2016, Papadopoulos suggested to a representative of a foreign government that the Trump campaign had received indications from the Russian government that it could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information that would be damaging to candidate Clinton. Papadopoulos shared information about Russian dirt with people outside of the campaign, and the office investigated whether he also provided it to a campaign official. Papadopoulos and the campaign officials with whom he interacted told the office that they did not recall that Papadopoulos passed them the information. Throughout the relevant period of time and for several months thereafter, Papadopoulos worked with Mifsud and two Russian nationals to arrange a meeting between the campaign and the Russian government. The meeting never came to pass. A. Origins of campaign work. In March 2016, Papadopoulos became a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign. As early as the summer of 2015, he had sought a role as a policy advisor to the campaign, but in a September 30, 2015 email, he was told that the campaign was not hiring policy advisors. In late 2015, Papadopoulos obtained a paid position on the campaign of Republican presidential candidate Ben Carson. Although Carson remained in the presidential race until early March 2016, Papadopoulos had stopped actively working for his campaign by early February 2016. At that time, Papadopoulos had reached out to a contact at the London Center of International Law Practice, LCILP, which billed itself as a, quote, unique institution comprising high-level professional international law practitioners dedicated to the advancement of global legal knowledge and the practice of international law, close quote. Papadopoulos said that he had finished his role with the Carson campaign and asked if LCILP was hiring. In early February, Papadopoulos agreed to join LCILP and arrived in London to begin work. As he was taking his position at LCILP, Papadopoulos contacted Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski via LinkedIn and emailed campaign official Michael Glasner about his interest in joining the Trump campaign. On March 2, 2016, Papadopoulos sent Glasner another message reiterating his interest. Glasner passed along word of Papadopoulos' interest to another campaign official, Joy Lutz, who notified Papadopoulos by email that she had been told by Glasner to introduce Papadopoulos to Sam Clovis, the Trump campaign's national co-chair and chief policy advisor. At the time of Papadopoulos' March 2 email, the media was criticizing Trump campaign for lack of experienced foreign policy or national security advisors within its ranks. To address that issue, senior campaign officials asked Clovis to put a foreign policy team together on short notice. After receiving Papadopoulos' name from Lutz, Clovis performed a Google search on Papadopoulos, learned that he had worked at the Hudson Institute, and believed that he had credibility on energy issues. On March 3, 2016, Clovis arranged to speak with Papadopoulos by phone to discuss Papadopoulos joining the campaign as a foreign policy advisor. And on March 6, 2016, the two spoke. Papadopoulos recalled that Russia was mentioned as a topic, and he understood from the conversation that Russia would be an important aspect of the campaign's foreign policy. At the end of the conversation, Clovis offered Papadopoulos a role as a foreign policy advisor to the campaign, and Papadopoulos accepted the offer. B. Initial Russia-related contacts. Approximately a week after signing on as a foreign policy advisor, Papadopoulos traveled to Rome, Italy, as part of his duties with LCILP. The purpose of the trip was to meet officials affiliated with Link Campus University, a for-profit institution headed by a former Italian government official. During the visit, Papadopoulos was introduced to Joseph Mifsud. Mifsud is a Maltese national who worked as a professor at the London Academy of Diplomacy in London, England. Although Mifsud worked out of London and was also affiliated with LCILP, the encounter in Rome was the first time that Papadopoulos met him. Mifsud maintained various contacts while living in London, as described further below. Among his contacts was, the next couple of words have been redacted investigative technique. A one-time employee of the IRA, the entity that carried out the Russian social media campaign. See Volume 1, Section 2, Supra. In January and February 2016, Mifsud and investigative technique redaction discussed investigative technique redaction, possibly meeting in Russia. The investigation did not identify evidence of them meeting. Later, in the spring of 2016, investigative technique redaction was also in contact, investigative technique redaction, that was linked to an employee of the Russian Ministry of Defense, and that account had overlapping contacts with a group of Russian military-controlled Facebook accounts that included accounts used to promote the DC Leaks releases in the course of the GRU's hack and release operations. See Volume 1, Section 3B1, Supra. According to Papadopoulos, Mifsud at first seemed uninterested in Papadopoulos when they met in Rome. After Papadopoulos informed Mifsud about his role in the Trump campaign, however, Mifsud appeared to take a greater interest in Papadopoulos. The two discussed Mifsud's European and Russian contacts and had a general discussion about Russia. Mifsud also offered to introduce Papadopoulos to European leaders and others with contacts to the Russian government. Papadopoulos told the office that Mifsud's claim of substantial connections with Russian government officials interested Papadopoulos, who thought that such connections could increase his importance as a policy advisor to the Trump campaign. On March 17, 2016, Papadopoulos returned to London. 4 days later, candidate Trump publicly named him as a member of the Foreign Policy and National Security Advisory Team chaired by Senator Jeff Sessions, describing Papadopoulos as, quote, an oil and energy consultant and, quote, an excellent guy. On March 24, 2016, Papadopoulos met with Mifsud in London. Mifsud was accompanied by a Russian female named Olga Polonskaya. Mifsud introduced Polonskaya as a former student of his who had connections to Vladimir Putin. Papadopoulos understood at the time that Polonskaya may have been Putin's niece, but later learned that this was not true. During the meeting, Polonskaya offered to help Papadopoulos establish contacts in Russia and stated that the Russian ambassador in London was a friend of hers. Based on this interaction, Papadopoulos expected Mifsud and Polonskaya to introduce him to the Russian ambassador in London, but that did not occur. Following his meeting with Mifsud, Papadopoulos sent an email to members of the Trump campaign's foreign policy advisory team. The subject line of the message was, quote, meeting with Russian leadership, including Putin, close quote. The message stated in pertinent part, I just finished a very productive lunch with a good friend of mine, Joseph Mifsud, the director of the London Academy of Diplomacy, who introduced me to both Putin's niece and the Russian ambassador in London, who also acts as the deputy foreign minister. At this point, footnote 428 reads, Papadopoulos' statements to the campaign were false. As noted above, the woman he met was not Putin's niece. He had not met the Russian ambassador in London, and the ambassador did not also serve as Russia's deputy foreign minister. End footnote. The topic of the lunch was to arrange a meeting between us and the Russian leadership to discuss U.S.-Russia ties under President Trump. They are keen to host us in a, quote, neutral city or directly in Moscow. They said the leadership, including Putin, is ready to meet with us and Mr. Trump should there be interest, waiting for everyone's thoughts on moving forward with this very important issue. Papadopoulos's message came at a time when Clovis perceived a shift in the campaign's approach toward Russia, from one of engaging with Russia through the NATO framework and taking a strong stance on Russian aggression in Ukraine. The rest of the paragraph, which is two lines, a line and a half long, has been redacted for grand jury testimony. It also includes a footnote, which has been redacted for grand jury testimony. Clovis's response to Papadopoulos, however, did not reflect that shift. Replying to Papadopoulos and the other members of the foreign policy advisory team copied on the initial email, Clovis wrote, this is most informative. Let me work it through the campaign. No commitments until we see how this plays out. My thought is that we probably should not go forward with any meetings with the Russians until we have had occasion to sit with our NATO allies, especially France, Germany, and Great Britain. We need to reassure our allies that we are not going to advance anything with Russia until we have everyone on the same page. More thoughts later today. Great work. C. March 31, Foreign Policy Team Meeting. The campaign held a meeting of the Foreign Policy Advisory Team with Senator Sessions and candidate Trump approximately 1 week later, on March 31, 2016, in Washington, D.C. The meeting, which was intended to generate press coverage for the campaign, took place at the Trump International Hotel. Papadopoulos flew to Washington for the event. At the meeting, Senator Sessions sat at one end of an oval table while Trump sat at the other, as reflected in the photograph below, which was posted to Trump's Instagram account. Papadopoulos sat between the two seats to Sessions' left. At this point, it does include a photograph, which has actually been widely distributed in the media and shown on TV of that meeting and that table. And the caption reads, March 31, 2016, meeting of foreign policy team with Papadopoulos, fourth from right of candidate Trump. There will be a copy of this on the website. During the meeting, each of the newly announced foreign policy advisors introduced themselves and briefly described their areas of expertise or experience. Papadopoulos spoke about his previous work in the energy sector and then brought up a potential meeting with Russian officials. Specifically, Papadopoulos told the group that he had learned through his contacts in London that Putin wanted to meet with candidate Trump and that these connections could help arrange the meeting. Trump and Sessions both reacted to Papadopoulos' statement. Papadopoulos and campaign advisor J.D. Gordon, who told investigators in an interview that he had a, quote, crystal clear recollection of the meeting, have stated that Trump was interested in and receptive to the idea of a meeting with Putin. Papadopoulos understood Sessions to be similarly supportive of the efforts to arrange a meeting. Gordon and two other attendees, however, recall that Sessions generally opposed the proposal, though they differ in their accounts of the concerns he voiced or the strength of the opposition he expressed. D. George Papadopoulos learns that Russia has, quote, dirt in the form of Clinton emails. Whatever Sessions' precise words at the March 31 meeting, Papadopoulos did not understand Sessions or anyone else in the Trump campaign to have directed that he refrain from making further efforts to arrange a meeting between the campaign and the Russian government. To the contrary, Papadopoulos told the office that he understood the campaign to be supportive of his efforts to arrange such a meeting. Accordingly, when he returned to London, Papadopoulos resumed those efforts. Throughout 2016, Papadopoulos continued to correspond with, meet with, and seek Russia contacts through Mifsud and, at times, Polonskaya. For example, within a week of her initial March 24 meeting with him, Polonskaya attempted to send Papadopoulos a text message, which email exchanges show to have been drafted or edited by Mifsud, addressing Papadopoulos's, quote, wish to engage with the Russian Federation. When Papadopoulos learned from Mifsud that Polonskaya had tried to message him, he sent her an email seeking another meeting. Polonskaya responded the next day that she was, quote, back in St. Petersburg, but, quote, would be very pleased to support Papadopoulos's initiatives between our two countries and, quote, to meet him again. Papadopoulos stated in reply that he thought, quote, a good step would be to introduce him to the, quote, Russian ambassador in London, and that he would like to talk to the ambassador, quote, or anyone else you recommend about a potential foreign policy trip to Russia. Mifsud, who had been copied on the email exchanges, replied on the morning of April 11, 2016. He wrote, quote, this is already been agreed. I am flying to Moscow on the 18th for a Valdai meeting, plus other meetings at the Duma. We will talk tomorrow, close quote. The two bodies referenced by Mifsud are part of or associated with the Russian government. The Duma is the Russian Legislative Assembly, while Valdai refers to the Valdai Discussion Club, a Moscow-based group that, quote, is close to Russia's foreign policy establishment. Papadopoulos thanked Mifsud and said that he would see him, quote, tomorrow. For her part, Polonskaya responded that she had, quote, already alerted my personal links to our conversation and your request, that, quote, we are all very excited, the possibility of a good relationship with Mr. Trump, and that, quote, the Russian Federation would love to welcome him once his candidature would be officially announced, close quote. Papadopoulos's and Mifsud's mentions of seeing each other, quote, tomorrow, referenced a meeting that the two had scheduled for the next morning, April 12, 2016, at the Andaz Hotel in London. Papadopoulos acknowledged the meeting during interviews with the office. And records from Papadopoulos' UK cell phone and his internet search history all indicate that the meeting took place. Following the meeting, Mifsud traveled as planned to Moscow. On April 18, 2016, while in Russia, Mifsud introduced Papadopoulos over email to Ivan Timofeev, a member of the Russian International Affairs Council, or RIAC. Mifsud had described Timofeev as having connections with the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, MFA, the executive entity in Russia responsible for Russian foreign relations. At this point, footnote 458 reads, during the campaign period, Papadopoulos connected over LinkedIn with several MFA-affiliated individuals in addition to Timofeev. On April 25, 2016, he connected with Dmitry Andreyko, publicly identified as a first secretary at the Russian embassy in Ireland. In July 2016, he connected with Yuri Melnik, the spokesperson for the Russian embassy in Washington, and with Alexei Krasilnikov, publicly identified as a counselor with the MFA. And on September 16, 2016, he connected with Sergei Nalobin, also identified as an MFA official. See Papadopoulos LinkedIn connections. The remainder of the footnote, several words, approximately a third of a line, has been redacted for investigative technique. End footnote. Over the next several weeks, Papadopoulos and Timofeev had multiple conversations over Skype and email about setting, quote, the groundwork for a, quote, potential meeting between the campaign and Russian government officials. Papadopoulos told the office that on one Skype call, he believed that his conversation with Timofeev was being monitored or supervised by an unknown third party because Timofeev spoke in an official manner and Papadopoulos heard odd noises on the line. Timofeev also told Papadopoulos in an April 25, 2016 email that he had just spoken, quote, to Igor Ivanov, the president of RIAC and former foreign minister of Russia, close quote, and conveyed Ivanov's advice about how best to arrange a, quote, Moscow visit. After a stop in Rome, Mifsud returned to England on April 25, 2016. The next day, Papadopoulos met Mifsud for breakfast at the Andaz Hotel, the same location as their last meeting. During that meeting, Mifsud told Papadopoulos that he had met with high-level Russian government officials during his recent trip to Moscow. Mifsud also said that on the trip, he learned that the Russians had obtained, quote, dirt on candidate Hillary Clinton. As Papadopoulos later stated to the FBI, Mifsud said that the dirt was in the form of, quote, emails of Clinton, and that they, quote, have thousands of emails. On May 6, 2016, 10 days after that meeting with Mifsud, Papadopoulos suggested to a representative of a foreign government that the Trump campaign had received indications from Russian government that it could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information that would be damaging to Hillary Clinton. At this point, footnote 465 reads, this information is contained in the FBI case opening document and related materials. The information is law enforcement sensitive, LES, and must be treated accordingly in any external dissemination. The foreign government conveyed this information to the U.S. government on July 26, 2016, a few days after WikiLeaks' release of Clinton-related emails. The FBI opened its investigation of potential coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign a few days later based on the information. E. Russia-related communications with the campaign. While he was discussing with his foreign contacts a potential meeting of campaign officials with Russian government officials, Papadopoulos kept campaign officials apprised of his efforts. On April 25, 2016, The day before, Mifsud told Papadopoulos about the emails. Papadopoulos wrote to senior policy advisor Stephen Miller that, quote, the Russian government has an open invitation by Putin for Mr. Trump to meet him when he is ready, close quote, and that, quote, the advantage of being in London is that these governments tend to speak a bit more openly in, quote, neutral cities, close quote. On April 27, 2016, after his meeting with Mifsud, Papadopoulos wrote a second message to Miller, stating that, quote, some interesting messages were coming in from Moscow about a trip when the time is right, close quote. The same day, Papadopoulos sent a similar email to campaign manager Corey Lewandowski, telling Lewandowski that Papadopoulos had, quote, been receiving a lot of calls over the last month about Putin wanting to host Trump and the team when the time is right, close quote. Papadopoulos' Russia-related communications with campaign officials continued throughout the spring and summer of 2016. On May 4, 2016, he forwarded to Lewandowski an email from Timofeev, raising the possibility of a meeting in Moscow, asking Lewandowski whether that was, quote, something we want to move forward with. The next day, Papadopoulos forwarded the same Timofeev email to Sam Clovis, adding to the top of the email, quote, Russia update. He included the same email in a May 21 message to senior campaign official Paul Manafort under the subject line, quote, request from Russia to meet Trump, stating that Russia has, quote, Russia has been eager to meet Mr. Trump for quite some time and have been reaching out to me to discuss. Manafort forwarded the message to another campaign official without including Papadopoulos and stated, quote, let's discuss. We need someone to communicate that Trump is not doing these trips. It should be someone low level in the campaign so as not to send any signal. Close quote. On June 1, 2016, Papadopoulos replied to an earlier email chain with Lewandowski about a Russia visit, asking if Lewandowski, quote, wanted to have a call about this topic, close quote, and whether, quote, we were following up with it, close quote. After Lewandowski told Papadopoulos to, quote, connect with Clovis because he was, quote, running point, Papadopoulos emailed Clovis that, quote, the Russian MFA was asking him, quote, if Mr. Trump is interested in visiting Russia at some point, close quote. Papadopoulos wrote in an email that he, quote, wanted to pass this info along to you to decide what's best to do with it and what message I should send or to ignore, close quote. At this point, footnote 475 reads, 6116 email Papadopoulos to Clovis, 3:29:14 p.m. Papadopoulos's email coincided in time with another message to Clovis suggesting a Trump-Putin meeting. First, on May 15, 2016, David Klein, a distant relative of then-Trump Organization lawyer Jason Greenblatt, emailed Clovis about a potential campaign meeting with Beryl Lazar, the chief rabbi of Russia. The email stated that Klein had contacted Lazar in February about a possible Trump-Putin meeting and that Lazar was, quote, a very close confidant of Putin. DJTFP00011547. 5:15:16, email Klein to Clovis, 5:45:24 p.m. The investigation did not find evidence that Clovis responded to Klein's email or that any further contacts of significance came out of Klein's subsequent meeting with Greenblatt and Rabbi Lazar at Trump Tower. Klein, 8/30/18, 3:02 at 2, end footnote. After several email and Skype exchanges with Timofeev, Papadopoulos sent one more email to Lewandowski on June 19, 2016, Lewandowski's last day as campaign manager. The email stated that, quote, the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs had contacted him and asked whether, if Mr. Trump could not travel to Russia, a campaign representative such as Papadopoulos could attend meetings. Papadopoulos told Lewandowski that he was, quote, willing to make the trip off the record if it's in the interest of Mr. Trump and the campaign to meet specific people. Following Lewandowski's departure from the campaign, Papadopoulos communicated with Clovis and Walid Ferez, another member of the Foreign Policy Advisory Team, about an off-the-record meeting between the campaign and Russian government officials, or with Papadopoulos's other Russian connections, Mifsud and Timofeev. Papadopoulos also interacted directly with Clovis and Ferez in connection with the summit of the Transatlantic Parliamentary Group on Counterterrorism, TAG, a group for which Ferez was co-secretary general. On July 16, 2016, Papadopoulos attended the TAG summit in Washington, D.C., where he sat next to Clovis, as reflected in the paragraph below. The photograph included is captioned George Papadopoulos, far right, and Sam Clovis, second from right. There will be a link to this on the podcast website. Although Clovis claimed to have no recollection of attending the TAG summit, Papadopoulos remembered discussing Russia and a foreign policy trip with Clovis and Ferez during the event. Papadopoulos's recollection is consistent with emails sent before and after the TAG summit. The pre-summit messages included a July 11, 2016 email in which Ferez suggested meeting Papadopoulos the day after the summit to chat, and a July 12 message in the same chain in which Ferez advised Papadopoulos that other summit attendees, quote, are very nervous about Russia, so be aware, close quote. 10 days after the summit, Papadopoulos sent an email to Mifsud listing Ferez and Clovis as other, quote, participants in a potential meeting at the London Academy of Diplomacy. Finally, Papadopoulos's recollection is also consistent with handwritten notes from a journal that he kept at the time. Those notes, which are reprinted in part below, appear to refer to potential September 2016 meetings in London with representatives of the, quote, Office of Putin, and suggest that Ferez, Clovis, and Papadopoulos, quote, Walid, Sam, me, would attend without the official backing of the campaign, quote, no official letter, no message from Trump, close quote. At this point, footnote 489 reads, Papadopoulos declined to assist in deciphering his notes, telling investigators that he could not read his own handwriting from the journal. Papadopoulos 9/19/17, 302 at 21. The notes, however, appear to read as listed in the column to the left of the image above. End footnote. At this point, the image that is included has the handwritten notes on the right and a deciphered, typed-out version on the left. There will be a link to this in the podcast, on the podcast website. Later communications indicate that Clovis determined that he, Clovis, could not travel. On August 15, 2016, Papadopoulos emailed Clovis that he had received requests from multiple foreign governments, quote, even Russia, for, quote, closed-door workshop/consultations abroad, close quote, and asked whether there was still interest for Clovis, Ferris, and Papadopoulos, quote, to go on that trip. Clovis copied Ferris on his response, which said that he could not, quote, travel before the election, but that he, quote, would encourage Papadopoulos and Walid to make the trips if it is feasible. Papadopoulos was dismissed from the Trump campaign in early October 2016 after an interview he gave to the Russian news agency Interfax generated adverse publicity. F. Trump campaign knowledge of, quote, dirt. Papadopoulos admitted telling at least one individual outside of the campaign, specifically the then Greek foreign minister, about Russia's obtaining Clinton-related emails. In addition, a different foreign government informed the FBI that 10 days after meeting with Mifsud in late April 2016, Papadopoulos suggested that the Trump campaign had received indications from the Russian government that it could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information that would be damaging to Hillary Clinton. This conversation occurred after the GRU spearfished Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta and stole his emails, and the GRU hacked into the DCCC and DNC. See Volume 1, Sections 3A and 3B, Supra. Such disclosures raised questions about whether Papadopoulos informed any Trump campaign official about the emails. When interviewed, Papadopoulos and the campaign officials who interacted with him told the office that they could not recall Papadopoulos' sharing the information that Russia had obtained dirt on candidate Clinton in the form of emails, or that Russia could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information about Clinton. Papadopoulos stated that he could not clearly recall having told anyone on the campaign and wavered about whether he accurately remembered an incident in which Clovis had been upset after hearing Papadopoulos tell Clovis that Papadopoulos thought, quote, they have her emails. The campaign officials who interacted or corresponded with Papadopoulos have similarly stated, with varying degrees of certainty, that he did not tell them. Senior policy advisor Stephen Miller, for example, did not remember hearing anything from Papadopoulos or Clovis about Russia having emails of or dirt on candidate Clinton. Clovis stated that he did not recall anyone, including Papadopoulos, having given him non-public information that a foreign government might be in possession of material damaging to Hillary Clinton. The next approximately five lines have been redacted for grand jury testimony. No documentary evidence and nothing in the email accounts or other communications facilities reviewed by the office shows that Papadopoulos shared this information with the campaign. G. Additional George Papadopoulos contact. The office investigated another Russia-related contact with Papadopoulos. The office was not fully able to explore the contact because the individual at issue, Sergei Milian, remained out of the country since the inception of our investigation and declined to meet with members of the office despite our repeated efforts to obtain an interview. Papadopoulos first connected with Milian via LinkedIn on July 15, 2016, shortly after Papadopoulos had attended the TAG summit with Clovis. Milian, an American citizen who is a native of Belarus, introduced himself as, quote, president of the New York-based Russian-American Chamber of Commerce, and claimed that through that position he had, quote, insider knowledge and direct access to the top hierarchy in Russian politics. Papadopoulos asked Timofeev whether he had heard of Milian. Although Timofeev said no, Papadopoulos met Milian in New York City. The meetings took place on July 30th and August 1st, 2016. Afterwards, Milian invited Papadopoulos to attend and potentially speak at two international energy conferences, including one that was to be held in Moscow in September 2016. Papadopoulos ultimately did not attend either conference. On July 31, 2016, following his first in-person meeting with Milian, Papadopoulos emailed Trump campaign official Beau Denisik to say that he had been contacted, quote, by some leaders of Russian-American voters here in the U.S. about their interest in voting for Mr. Trump, and to ask whether he should, quote, put you in touch with their group, U.S.-Russia Chamber of Commerce. Denisik thanked Papadopoulos, quote, for taking the initiative, but asked him to, quote, hold off with outreach to Russian Americans because, quote, too many articles had already portrayed the campaign, then campaign chairman Paul Manafort and candidate Trump, as, quote, being pro-Russian. On August 23rd, 2016, Milian sent a Facebook message to Papadopoulos, promising that he would, quote, share with you a disruptive technology that might be instrumental in your political work for the campaign. Papadopoulos claimed to have no recollection of this matter. On November 9, 2016, shortly after the election, Papadopoulos arranged to meet with Milian in Chicago to discuss business opportunities. including potential work with Russian, quote, billionaires who are not under sanctions. The meeting took place on November 14, 2016, at the Trump Hotel and Tower in Chicago. According to Papadopoulos, the two men discussed partnering on business deals. Papadopoulos perceived that Milian's attitude toward him had changed when Papadopoulos stated that he was only pursuing private sector opportunities and was not interested in a job in the administration. The two remained in contact, however, and had extended online discussions about possible business opportunities in Russia. The two also arranged to meet at a Washington, D.C. bar when both attended Trump's inauguration in late January 2017. That concludes the first two sections in Part A, which I should mention has a total of 8 parts, so we do have quite a bit more to sift through just from the campaign period. So we've got our work cut out for us. I get the impression from even just the little we've read so far that it was kind of practice on the campaign, which admittedly was rather small in those early months, it was practice to share with each other. Everybody seemed to know what everybody else was up to. I mean, Papadopoulos seemed rather excited to share his contacts, and I guess he thought, as they mentioned, that it might contribute to his importance within the campaign. That said, campaign officials who were interviewed did tell investigators that, you know, they did not recall or did not remember Papadopoulos sharing information with them. It seems rather unlikely that someone bold enough to send connection requests to people on LinkedIn who purportedly worked for the Russian government while simultaneously working on a U.S. presidential campaign would refrain from name-dropping and sharing intel that he came upon. But that's just my opinion. I'll leave it at that today. And in the coming episode, we'll have more from Section 4, Russian Government Links to and Contacts with the Trump Campaign, Part A, the Campaign Period. In the meantime, if you'd like to get a look at the images described in this episode, you can find them on the podcast website, which is www.papertrailmedia.co/podcast. And remember, you can always download a copy of the Mueller report on the website as well. Thanks for joining me today, and stay tuned for the next installment of the Mueller report, a reading. I'm Milena Balbo.